Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Welcome to a very special episode of Swamp Donkey Radio. Today, we are bringing in one of my favorite baseball creators into the swamp. His name is Bailey, but better known as Foolish Baseball. We're going to talk about the Ohtani situation, some fun guys who can make his top 50 next year, as well as some potential fun MVP Rookie of the Year winners this season. So let's get right into it, and thank you for watching. Make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. All right, welcome to the swamp, Bailey. You guys know him as Foolish Baseball. I'm going to call you Bailey because calling you by your YouTube channel name would be a little weird. I'm going to be honest. That'd be like if you just called me We Got Ice the entire time.
Yeah, We Got Ice Zoe.
Yeah, that, dude, that's what sometimes at John Boy, just for like SEO purposes, someone will title a video, We Got Ice Zoe. And I'm like, I've worked here for 2 years, man. I got a name. But thanks for coming on. I'm really excited to talk about it. I love all your videos. I've said many times before that your Pedro Martinez Baseball Bits, in my opinion, is the best baseball video essay on YouTube. I've watched it like 5 times. I think that's over, got to be over 1 million views on your channel now. And I'm probably 500,000 of those.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I was curious, how long did it take to make a baseball bits for you? Because they're so like, I just watched your account video the other day. And like the amount of data that you have to like sift through, like how long does that take you?
The count video in particular took a long time. That one is close to the longest amount of time I've spent working on a video. But I would say the general trend for me is it's about, you know, 3 weeks split up into 3 different processes. So the first week is all that writing and that research, you know, a lot of stat head, a lot of Excel. You know, that second week is sort of like when I get all the clips I need, or I, you know, do like the graphics. And then that third week is, you know, record the voiceover and put it all together in the editor. So if I were to work on it like every single day consecutively, do nothing else, you know, it would probably be, I'm going to guess, you know, around 15 to 20 days to put one out. But of course, I have other things I do, too. So, yeah. You know, I've got Foolish Bailey second channel and Patreon to worry about. So and, you know, I like an off day every now and then, too. So that's how long it takes to make a baseball bit. So it's about 3 weeks.
I can't believe you're trying to establish a work-life balance, man. Don't you know that the people just need to drain you for your baseball content?
We need more content.
Dude, I was watching that video and I thought that was probably going to be about how long it took you, because at first I was watching it and my first instinct went to all the B-roll and I was like, dude, that must take forever to gather. But then I was like, dude, the premise of this video is so complex in terms of like finding the stats for every hitter in a 2-1 count. I'm like, that's insane. But I mean, it's why they're so good and why they're so successful. I mean, the Foolish Bailey videos, I personally like enjoy watching a lot more. Like the top 5 hitter ones, I think are awesome. And you recently let out a little tweet that I want to talk about. You did your fun and kind of like really out there. Obviously, these aren't your like actual predictions with like a ton of research, but these are your fun yearly award picks. And there's a couple I wanted to highlight for NL MVP. You have O'Neal Cruz and Seiya Suzuki as your fun picks. And I feel like O'Neal Cruz has kind of become like baseball Twitter's I know baseball MVP pick. He's become like super popular. How much are you believing in that, those two as like actual MVP candidates?
You know, they Cruz definitely has MVP upside. For sure. I don't think there has been a, I mean, he's such an incredible athlete. I personally would probably rank myself as more excited about him this year, at least, than Ellie De La Cruz, who is his counterpart, who he's always compared to, because we had no giant shortstops with the last name Cruz for 150 years. And all of a sudden we had two in the same division.
That's actually crazy.
So I believe in O'Neal Cruz, like MVP upside for sure. Seiya Suzuki, as good of a player as he is, I don't know if he has that upside. Like he finished last season so strong. He had the, and if, especially if you follow the whole narrative of it, because he got benched for a few days, you know, in the dead of summer, was having a tough time, and he just came back like so strong. And I've always rated him. I was really excited when he was coming over from NPB, and I thought he had like a good ish rookie season. And now he's had like a better sophomore year, and now he's going into his third year. So Yeah, I don't know if that's MVP upside, but in terms of guys who'd be like extra massive long shots, no one would even think of it. That would be sort of my pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one in my mind. Also, I saw that last night, and you did this. I forget which video you said this in, but I was watching and doing some research for our conversation, and you were highlighting Trey Turner. Maybe it was your top 50. And you were like, if his second half was obviously insane, he had a 1 dot OPS after the whole Phillies thing with the standing
Right.
ovation. But you were like, oh, if that was in his first half of the year and his second half of the year was his first half of the year, everyone would be like, Trey Turner is on the downs, is on the downs, you know, he's not going to be that
Yeah.
good this year. And I feel like a little bit of the same with Seiya, because his second half of the season was so good, and everyone's like, dude, this is the year he's going to break out. So it is interesting how you can like butter knife those numbers. It's like, oh, if you're just good in August and September, you're going to be everyone's like
Yeah.
favorite
Of course, you'll be good for the entire
pick.
6 month season afterward. So, I actually, with a Twitter mutual of mine, he's at TJ Stats. I had him, he ran some numbers real quick for me, and it was basically correlating like first and second half OPS with like the next season. And the correlation is turned out to be the exact same. And that's because there are more games pre All-Star break than post All-Star break. So, usually, like, you get to the All-Star game and teams have played, I don't know, 88. 90 games. And so while the second half benefits from recency, it's a smaller sample overall. So the value of the first half and the second half is like basically the same going forward.
That's crazy, because if you tell me someone had a good second half, dude, I'm buying all of the stock. I'm like,
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, MVP season is loading right now. That's a
Yeah, it turns
fun.
out the first half also matters.
Exactly. Another one that is fun. Obviously, I know you're not really believing this, and you're a big Braves fan, right? That's your
Oh,
team.
yeah.
Yeah. So I figured. So you got Chris Sale coming over. You have as your NL Cy Young. I've watched Chris Sale so long in Boston, and you've highlighted him in one of your videos before. And I agree, if he's healthy, I mean, that's kind of like the big thing for him. But I wanted to touch on Vaughn Grisham, because I mean, you're a Braves fan and you follow a lot. What was kind of like, in your opinion, his upside? Do you think he's actually going to be like a good player for the Red Sox? Or are you kind of like, all right, the Braves traded him, I'm fine with that?
Yeah, the upside is curious to me because I think it's limited by his defense. He hasn't really shown the capacity to, well, he certainly hasn't shown the capacity to be an MLB shortstop. I mean,
For
I think the
sure.
Braves figured that out. For him, it's going to be probably more long term at second base in Boston if he can make that work. But his floor is high because he has a great hit tool, you know. So I feel like he's, you know, you give him enough reps, he's going to be hitting, you know, 280. You know, and that's going to give him a solid floor for on base percentage, and he has some pop. So I think it's for him, it comes down to what can he do defensively to make sure that he you know, can stick around in an up the middle position, because otherwise he's going to have to hit a lot more
Yeah.
in order to, you know, fulfill you know, his potential value.
I got really worried. You see, it's with a couple teams when they trade someone. Like, I feel like whenever the Brewers trade someone, like a young guy, I'm always like, well, okay, what's the real story here? And I kind of feel the same way about the Braves. I'm like, everyone, as soon as Sale went to Atlanta for Grissom, everyone was like, dude, what a return. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like,
Yeah.
what's the real story here? I mean, I'm really hyped for him. I agree. His offense is kind of where he needs to carry. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening with a lot of these young guys who are coming up in the league. I mean, this recent draft, the 2023 draft, I think top three of the top four guys are projected to debut this year. Wyatt Langford just debuted for the Rangers. I think Skeens is probably going to get a call up, as well as Cruz. The only one who's probably won't is Max Clark, because he's 18. So it's like he's probably got a little bit of time. I feel like the young guys are just coming up into the league faster than ever now. And it's like you highlighted in one of your videos, Julio Rodriguez is 23 years old, but it feels like he's already had like a whole story arc of his career, and he's 23. I'm older than Julio Rodriguez. That's crazy to me. But the last one I want to talk about is Gavin Stone for Rookie of the
Oh.
Year. And that's more interesting to me as like the Dodgers rotation. Also, we got a little ties to the Stones. But the Dodgers rotation, you got Bobby Miller, and you got Gavin Stone. I feel like one of those guys got to give him a lot of innings this year if they're going to get through the whole season. Is Gavin Stone like your guy? Do you like believe in him?
Well, yeah, I do, and but it's also an opportunity thing,
For
as you
sure.
just said. So some of these guys, you know, a lot of time the season starts and whoever's going to win Rookie of the Year isn't even on the opening day roster yet. You know, maybe there's some service time manipulation. Maybe they're not going to come up. Like when a couple years ago, yeah, Julio won, but like Adley was on pace to win, but he was banged up to start the year. You know,
Exactly.
And so I like Gavin Stone in terms of the opportunity, which is that he gets to, you know, kick things off in this Dodgers rotation. And I think he does have potential to win, you know, Rookie of the Year, or at least, you know, get those sort of like down ballot votes and surprise people, because it's a, I mean, part of it is because we have some like really great talent coming over from Japan and Korea this year, but the rookie classes overall are pretty stacked in the National League.
Yeah, they're good this year. Also, I really like that he gets to pitch. I mean, everyone's talked about that Dodgers offense, so he's probably going to be pitching with a lead a lot of the time, which I feel like as a young guy is kind of helpful when it's like, oh, dude, I can just kind of stay in the zone, and if I give up a homer or two, it's actually not that big a deal. It's not like I'm holding on to a 1-0 lead. I saw that a little bit with the Red Sox last year with Bayou. It's like every time he was pitching, it was like the game was on the line, and every mistake felt so much more monumental for him. So I like that pick a lot too. And you were talking about young guys who like service time manipulation. Obviously, Jackson Holliday is everybody's like darling, and everyone's like, he's going to be Rookie of the Year. Some people are going crazy with him. But the guy I really like that you highlighted, and I'll move a little bit into your top 50 and some stuff I want to talk about, and maybe some guys who could make it. You had Gunnar Henderson at 26, and I think you said, quote unquote, is he becoming underrated? Because we're all talking about, I mean, the Orioles infield, and we're talking about a new shortstop they have. And I've kind of talked a lot about this offseason as like, do you keep Gunnar at shortstop? And then Holliday comes up and he goes somewhere else. But between like Bobby Witt Jr. and Gunnar Henderson, do you see either of them kind of taking a step forward to being like a serious MVP candidate this year in the American League?
Yeah, I mean, I could see both doing it, honestly. I probably appreciate Gunnar more. Like, I think my, like, I'm high on both if you were to take a look at the list, but I'm probably higher on Gunnar compared to at least fan consensus, right? Because like you just said it, you know, everyone was super hyped for Adley, and now everyone's super hyped for Jackson Holliday. It's like, wait, they also had another number one overall prospect come up, and this, you know, and this one won Rookie of the Year already.
Yeah, he did it already.
And I think he is going to stick at shortstop. I think Holliday is going to play mostly second base when he comes up. So that gives him an opportunity to create more value on the field. And so, yeah, and I think part of it is, you know, for Gunnar's sake, it's like, I'm not sure if he has like that standout tool the same way like his counterpart in the National League, Corbin Carroll, does, right?
Yeah.
Corbin Carroll, we know what he's about. Like, it's the speed, like that's what drives his game. Gunnar's just, he's, you know, you'd give him like a 60 grade on almost everything he does, you know? And so maybe that doesn't make him super compelling, but it makes him a really, really good baseball player.
No, I agree. I actually think you put that really well, especially with, it's kind of like the new thing is more interesting. Like, we went from Adley to Gunnar, and now we're going from Gunnar to Jackson Holliday. But I feel like I started talking about this really early in the offseason, because once everyone started getting in on Holliday coming up, and I mean, I believe in him, the guy's going to be a stud. But I was like, I think Gunnar is their shortstop. Like, he just won Rookie of the Year, and he was freaking insane for a rookie. So I was like, there's no way they're going to move him off shortstop. And he's good defensively, too. So I'm like, I feel like that, especially when you're bringing up someone who's going to be 20 years old, I feel like he's going to start at second base. Bobby Witt Jr.'s season last year is insane to me. You put it in your top 50 list. He went from a minus 8 runs at shortstop to a plus 10, and I feel like he's become, like, the fun, he's going to be MVP pick. And I actually think that's like a possibility this year, besides the fact that like Aaron Judge and Juan Soto play in the American League. But like Bobby Witt, if he was maybe on a better team and got a little bit more attention, could actually be a serious, like, legit contender for MVP this year.
For sure. And you look at those teams like the Royals, you know, if they're really good and they're playing, you know, meaningful baseball in September, maybe making a push for the division, it'll be because of, you know, guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and that sort of, people like that, you know, they like that narrative. They like a team that comes out of nowhere that's propelled by a star player.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to talk about a couple guys who you maybe think this year, like you said, we got a stacked rookie class. I mean, there's so many guys who are already, who are like 20, 21 years old, 22, are going to be making their major league debuts, and they're already ready to go. I mean, Wyatt Langford looked like a legit hitter. Just by looks, I'm not even talking about stats. Like, he was in the box, and I was like, this dude's massive, and he's 20. How old is this guy? So who is, like, one guy who you've been looking at, and, like, maybe he could be someone I break into my top 50 next season? Not to put you on the spot, but if there was one guy that you were like, I think this guy could do it.
Yeah, it would probably be Langford, to be honest with
I like
you.
That.
Like, the pace that he is on, if you look at what he's done just in his professional career so far, you know, like, he just completely breezed through the minor leagues last year. And I was super high on him coming off the draft. Like, the day before the draft, I was like, if I had the number one overall pick, I would pick Wyatt Langford,
Oh,
you know,
wow,
ahead of
really?
the LSU guys. And so far, I mean, I think that take looks pretty good. But yeah, Langford definitely stands out. Holiday, you know, is another one that we'll see when he comes up. And then I'm curious to see some of these pitchers too, like Skeens, you know, those would be examples of guys who, you know, have the potential to impress me in their rookie season and end up on the 50 the following year, the same way, you know, it happened for, Gunnar and Corbin Carroll. And then, you know, the year before that, like Adley and Julio, you know, like you could, you know, if you have the pedigree and then you have a big rookie season, like you can be rated pretty highly.
Yeah, I think I agree with the Langford, and I like Cruz a lot. He was my favorite player coming out of that draft. He's a little older than Langford, but the one thing that scares me about pitchers, like you mentioned Skeen, is I don't know why this is stuck in my head. I feel like pitchers are a little bit more, obviously Skeens is going to be good, but like when Leiter came out of the draft a couple years ago, he went second overall, and everyone was talking like he could just start the year in Major League Baseball. I think that was like the big narrative around him. So obviously Skeens is going to be good, but I like your take on going with Langford because I feel like a hitter is a bit more safe when you have that number one pick to go with than a pitcher who's everyone's kind of one pitch away from missing 2 years at this point with how hard everyone's throwing now. So obviously Skeens, if healthy, is going to be nasty, but I would have also gone with either Cruz or Langford with that one pick. I'm becoming a bit of a draft snob, dude. I loved the draft, especially now that everyone's like, all these young guys come up so fast, the draft actually matters. Whereas I feel like for a while,
yeah, it does.
For baseball fans, it's like, I don't need to pay attention to this. I mean, Marcelo Meyer was the Red Sox top pick in like 40 years, and he hasn't even played a major league game. But last year's class, everyone's playing this year. So I think it's really fun for baseball fans to watch.
And this year's draft is really strong in terms of like college bats once again. So those guys could be impact players in the big leagues sooner than you'd think.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, for baseball fans to kind of get in on the young guys, because then, like you said, we go from 1 year, last year, Bobby Witt Jr. and Gunnar Henderson are the guys that everyone's talking about. It's like, dude, these guys are going to break out. And now we've kind of not forgotten about them, but everyone's kind of moved on to the new, sexier names and is ready to kind of go in that direction. Kind of to change the topic quickly from baseball on the field to a little baseball off the field. I don't want to linger too long on this, but I do think it's important because when I did my Ohtani episode, I quoted your Twitter thread quite a lot. I thought it was really well done. You put it in a good situation. Jack actually showed it to me. So I wanted to get your opinion on the whole Ohtani Ipe situation. Obviously, we've gotten a lot more context than when this thing first came out. We got the Shohei press conference, which I think was, I haven't talked about it on the show yet, but I think was actually really valuable. I thought he took a pretty strong stance. So as of now, with all the information you have, where are you kind of landing on the whole situation? Are you kind of believe in Shohei's story as it is, or do you think there maybe is a little shenanigans behind the scenes?
I at this point, I'm taking it at face value. And I think one piece of it that I think people are kind of having trouble with is the idea that of whether or not Ipe himself would have access to Ohtani's funds and be able to move a lot of Ohtani's money at once without Ohtani knowing. And I honestly think I lean towards that being like very possible because, you know, like if you think about the relationship they had, you know, he was, at least in the public sphere, Ipe was Shohei's only friend and they were tied at the hip.
Yeah.
And he was his, you know, interpreter. And that's just, that doesn't just mean, you know, he translates the words. Mm-hmm. It means that's like the lens with which you view, you know, the country in a
For
way.
Sure.
And so, and you know, the way that, remember, you'll recall during the lockout that, you know, team employees and players couldn't communicate with each other. So Ipe quit his job with the Angels to work for Shohei personally. You know, it seems to me like he was acting, less so as an interpreter and more so as a personal assistant at times. And, you know, an assistant, you know, you can understand would have access to someone's funds like that. So I think that's very possible. So I think right now I'm not in like a particularly conspiratorial mood unless something else comes out. I do think there are just certainly questions, and I'm glad, you know, when MLB came out and they said that they're investigating this, I'm glad they are. I think that deserves its due diligence, but Right now, I think I am taking the story at face value, which is that the story that's being put forward is that Ipe stole money from Shohei without Shohei's knowledge. There was no knowing bailout of gambling debts. But we'll just have to see, man, because there are still certainly possibilities.
I mean, I'm kind of on the same page as you. I wanted to bring it up with you because I cited you a lot in that episode, so I thought it'd be cool to kind of talk about it a little bit. But I think this is one of those cases, and you've been doing baseball YouTube for a while, and you've been doing baseball content for a while, where it feels like we all kind of just want, not by we all, I mean just people online, want the story to be a lot bigger than it's actually going to turn out to be, because I kind of feel like that's the story and we're at like an end. Like, I don't plan on talking about it after this.
And part of it is it's really sad, so
it
like,
is sad.
That's,
yeah.
That's why it people actually would rather believe that Shohei was in on it somehow, because at least in that sense, you know, nobody stole from anybody, you know, no one, you know, there was no betrayal. No one was stabbed in the back. So I think that's part of it is, you know, like you can say, you know, oh, people just want to go crazy and they want to spread conspiracies and they want to, you know, make Shohei look bad and make the Dodgers look bad. But it's also, you know, the alternative, which is the story being told now, is really sad.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you want to know what? That's a fair point. I didn't think about it from that lens. I agree. The human element is that sad. Like, when people were talking about how Ipe, did he have access to his bank account? I mean, even if the possibility he did kind of shows how close, I mean, of friends they are. It's like your best friend kind
right.
of just, like, betrayed you, someone you trusted that much. I guess I haven't really thought about it from that lens. I've kind of more thought about it from the media baseball lens, but it's a good point. It's kind of if this is the reality of the situation, it's kind of just like a heartbreaking tale. Of another,
yeah, it's not going to make anyone happy, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, it's another, like, really famous athlete who got really famous and made a lot of money and then got betrayed by someone he trusted and was really close with. That's an interesting way to view it. I didn't think about it like that. I do have some questions for you, as every time I do an episode of Swamp Donkey Radio, I like to go around the antlers, and usually we take 5 questions from our audience, but I made 5 5 specific questions for you. This is not one of my 5 questions, but I do have to ask you, do you have a favorite mammal?
A favorite man? Yes, I do. Elephants. I feel very strongly about elephants. I believe that, you know, just in our relationship, historically, humans and elephants should be friends, and we have not always been friends. They have been poached for their beautiful tusks, and as cavemen, we hunted the woolly mammoth, but I think elephants, just in terms of how they conduct themselves socially, are like so similar. Like the dynamics they have are so similar to human beings. Yeah, I just have I like. So on my Patreon, like, one thing I'll do, and I'm not patting myself on the back about this, but every December I donate that month's Patreon earnings to like various charities,
oh, wow.
and one charity was to an elephant sanctuary. So that tells you how much I feel very strongly about elephants. Humans and elephants should be friends, and I will do whatever I can to support my elephant brothers and sisters.
Dude, that made me really happy. Everyone go subscribe to Foolish's Patreon. That's really nice, dude. Also, we love elephants. You don't see producer Ronnie on camera today, but he was absolutely nodding his head in joy about your elephant take right there.
I love elephants.
That's Ronnie, by the way. He does love elephants. All right, first question. I've watched your videos. You've mentioned previously that Jose Ramirez is your favorite player in baseball, but who's your favorite pitcher in baseball?
Ooh, I mean, the personal bias pick would be Spencer Strider.
I mean, good pick.
yeah, I mean, he's probably the best pitcher in baseball right now. I know him personally, which I can't say about a lot of pitchers.
Oh, that's cool.
So Strider would definitely be up there, but I have a lot of appreciation for Pablo Lopez right now.
Great answer, dude. I was watching Pablo yesterday on opening day, and
he was cooking.
I was having a great time.
Yeah. He did driveline the previous offseason, and they added a sweeper, and his fastball has more carry. And so, right, like, he's just like, I like a guy who can just like command a lot of different pitches that do different things. And he can definitely do that.
I mean, that's a great answer. I was actually yesterday when I was watching all the games, we're recording this the day after opening day. All I was focused on was Pablo Lopez start against the Royals, and there was Yankees like Astros going on. I was like, I don't care. I'm locked in on Pablo right now. He's dialed in.
I do want to shout out one more pitcher that just came to mind. He's injured right now, and I don't think we're going to see him pitch this year. But I love Brandon Woodruff too. Also, ooh, extremely fun to watch.
Good one.
You know, good ground ball rate guy, but also a lot of swing and miss.
Did he sign with, is he a free agent? He went back
to the Brewers.
Oh, okay. Cause I remember a lot of people.
So it's like a 2-year deal. So he rehabs this year and comes back the next year.
Yes. Cause I remember a lot of people wanted the Red Sox to sign him to a 2-year deal. They were like, sign another injured pitcher for a year and then he'll come back the next year. My next question, this is more of a creator question. Cause I'm interested. As a creator, do you enjoy making like your foolish top 5 hitters you like videos on your second channel or Baseball Bits More?
Ooh, that's, you know, it's becoming kind of 50-50 for me. Like, I think it depends what kind of Baseball Bits it is, because right now I'm starting on a Baseball Bits and I can just feel like the creative juices flowing. Like, I can just feel this is going to be like a really like intensive video where I learn a lot too in the process of making it, similar to the one that I did a couple months ago about the count.
Nice.
And so that, when I have that level of motivation, then it's definitely Baseball Bits. But there are other times where I do enjoy making the more topical stuff. And I even feel like, so, you know, I put out a Baseball Bits about a week ago about Elvis Luciano. And of course, I was working on my sort of preseason content, like 5 players I like and don't like it, and Foolish 50 at the same time. And one thing I enjoyed is that I felt like people were anticipating like the Foolish 50 more than what was coming next. And so that kind of, you know, kept me motivated, because it said, you know, people really care about this, even though it's something that's on what's supposed to be my second channel, right? That's like this sort of secondary thing to the main thing that I do. People were excited about this, and I wanted to make sure I delivered something interesting for them. So it can go either way.
I'm in I have like a little text group chat with some of my friends that I grew up with. And when your Foolish 50 dropped, they shared the video in the chat and they were like, boys, it's here. Like the people look forward to that list, man. I think I also like how you kind of, comp it to the MLB Network list, because that one always gets everyone so like up in arms. So I mean it's a great video. It's one of my favorite things you do. Next, I've mentioned before, Pedro Martinez Baseball Bits is my favorite video, and I think it's one of the best video essays on YouTube. What's the favorite Baseball Bits you've ever made?
It's still probably the Rod Barajas one. That remains not quite my most viewed, but one of the most viewed. And I like that it deals with a catcher. Like a lot of my sort of iconic Baseball Bits are about a catcher one way or another, like Yadier Molina or Jeff Mathis. And this is just another one. And I like that there's kind of a twist in the middle, you know, like we think this is all Rod Barajas' fault, that he's letting all these stolen bases get past him. And then we discover, you know, the Pirates have really slow deliveries from all their pitchers, and they weren't even teaching a pickoff move in the minors at the time. So like that was how little they cared about controlling the run game versus simply focusing on executing the pitches. So, and I think it's especially relevant now, because with the bigger bases and a more emphasis on stolen bases, like we may see certain catchers get exposed like that, you know, in games where they're allowing, you know, 3, 4, 5 stolen bases in a game. And that's going to have to be something that teams focus on, or else they're going to, you know, other teams are going to wreak havoc on the base pass against them.
Yeah, that one was a great one. That might have been the first one that I watched. I remember watching that, and at first I was like, oh, this guy sucks. And then the video went on and I was like, oh, dude, it's not your fault, man. You're doing great back there. Next. Obviously, big Atlanta Brave fan. You live in Atlanta. Who is your favorite Atlanta Brave of all time?
Ooh, I mean, so when I was a kid growing up, it was definitely a Chipper. I mean,
it's a good pick, man.
Chipper Jones is, I mean, that I know is that's like asking a Red Sox fan your age and saying David Ortiz, you know.
That's my answer, though. Sometimes the chalk pick is the right pick, you know.
So he would be the chalk. I mean, the fact of the matter is his like first full season in Atlanta was when I was born, and his last season was when I was, you know, finishing up high school. So like that is my childhood, is the entirety of Chipper Jones's career. But I also have a bit of a soft spot for what's a good example here? Javi Lopez, I always liked.
Good one.
And then Brian McCann and Jason Hayward, like those guys who were kind of like the next generation. Always liked those guys too.
I mean, sometimes the chalk pick is the right pick. That's what I always say. It's like it's a chalk pick for a reason, man, because they were good and fun to watch. And the last question I got for you today, What would be your dream job in baseball if it wasn't making foolish videos? Or would it even be in baseball? Would you want to do something else?
I think I would like to be like a funky seventh inning reliever.
Oh, I like that. Oh, did that, see, that reminds me. I think it was in your baseball bits. You had a line. He was like, if pitchers couldn't trick me, I would be a great hitter in the league.
That's what I think. If they try to trick you, that's the thing.
I've
could totally
heard someone
handle it.
Place it as like they're trying to trick you.
Yeah, they're just a bunch of fraudsters is what they were, because they're like, here's a pitch that looks like it's gonna be a strike. Just kidding, it's not. It hit the plate.
That got me pretty good. No,
a serious answer would be, I think, a job where I wouldn't want to be like a front office, like egghead, like running all the numbers. But I would want to have a job where I communicate those ideas from the front office to the dugout. And that, you know, that has been, I read Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchik's book a few years ago, MVP Machine. And they talk about this position on teams that they refer to as the conduit. And that is someone who can speak both languages, right? Who can speak the languages of the front office and the languages of the clubhouse and marry the two, because that's kind of what I do already, right? Yeah. Like I don't really come up with these new stats or new ideas, but my job is to communicate them to an audience that otherwise might not be exposed to them.
I mean, that's a great answer. I haven't heard of that book. I'll have to check it out. I was going to say, that's kind of what your YouTube channel is. It's like I'm watching videos and we're looking at, there was one, I wrote it down somewhere. I think you had Womp Rate or something. You dropped.
Oh, that was on the Foolish 50. So Ben Clemens from Fangraphs put together a little article about that a few weeks ago, and Sean Murphy was high on that. But yeah, it was called Womps per Whiffs. Yes. And it's basically barrels versus your swinging strike rate. So how many times you swing and miss.
Yeah, I mean, I would have never come across that term unless it was for one of your videos. So you're kind of already doing that. It's just with being in a different light. So that's a great answer. I mean, thank you so much, dude, for taking the time to do this. Everyone, make sure you go subscribe to his Patreon, because you're already subscribed to his channel. We know that. Go subscribe to the Foolish Baseball Patreon, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks again, Bailey.
Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.